Hey, I'm Dr. Michael Hunter, forensic pathologist from Autopsy, Reels Channel's medical mystery series on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Be sure to download the Podcast One app and subscribe. Then go to Reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, to find more programs like this one on Reels Channel.
One of the giants of jazz, Miles Davis, who helped to define what it meant to be cool, died today in a hospital in California.
Miles Davis was one of the greatest and most influential jazz musicians of all time.
It was electric when you heard him play.
Miles took that trumpet to its limits.
His masterpiece, Kind of Blue, is regarded as one of the best jazz records ever made.
Nobody could get to that pathos, that haunting sound.
But there was another side to the jazz genius. His anger and wild mood swings earned him the nickname the Prince of Darkness.
His volatility was off the charts.
He could explode and burst all over you like lava.
And rumors of addiction and ill health plagued him all his life.
He was a wreck. He was scotch taped together.
And on September 28, 1991, Miles Davis died suddenly after going into the hospital for what he described as a routine tune-up.
We all assumed things were going to be just fine as always.
Miles Davis's death certificate states cardiac arrest as the cause of death. But everyone's heart stops when they die, so this doesn't actually tell me what killed him. I'll need to examine every part of Miles' medical history if I'm to uncover the real reason for the untimely death of this jazz legend.
For nearly 20 years, acclaimed forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter has expertly conducted thousands of autopsies. As the chief medical examiner in one of America's biggest cities, he works closely with law enforcement and other forensic specialists to investigate suspicious deaths.
Miles Davis died at the age of 65. Alongside detailed medical reports and firsthand accounts, I have here his death certificate. And my question is, what led to that fatal cardiac arrest? Miles was a well-known addict and had a host of serious medical conditions. Establishing the precise circumstances surrounding his death won't be easy.
January 1991, New York, 9 months before his death.
It was a typical day. We had Flavor Flav from Public Enemy and Darren Johnson from the Miles Davis Band hanging out, Miles in the kitchen cooking chili back and forth.
Promoter Claude Nobbs arrives. He wants Miles to play a show-stopping world tour culminating in the famous Mantra International Jazz Festival.
Gordon Meltzer, tour manager.
Miles looked at him and said, Claude, you're just trying to rip me off. You're trying to get me to do things I don't want to do. You white people are all the same, trying to take advantage of me. Claude agreed to more than twice what Miles had ever been paid for a single night show. Based on that, Miles decided to make that happen.
It is to be a career-defining retrospective for a man who has always put the music first. At 64, Miles has been married and divorced 3 times and has 4 children by 2 other women. Though he seems to have found stability with girlfriend of 7 years, Jo Gelbard.
The tour was kind of a wrap-up of his life, and I kind of talked him into it, and I said I would go with him.
Playing the trumpet for hours at a concert is physically very demanding. You need to have stamina as well as good lung capacity and strong muscles in the face and lips to produce the notes. The fact that Miles was still making music and playing concerts in the months leading up to his death tells me that he was in pretty good shape. So, I want to know, why did he die so suddenly?
Miles Dewey Davis III was born in 1926 in Alton, Illinois, to a well-to-do family. His father was a successful dental surgeon.
Because Miles' father was a dentist, and came from a middle-class background in a very poor town, that gave Miles certain advantages that others didn't have.
Quincy Troop, biographer and friend.
Miles grew up with a silver spoon in his mouth. He grew up like getting anything he wanted.
His mother was a music teacher and violinist. At the age of 13, Miles was given a trumpet by his father, going against his mother's wishes, who wanted him to take up the violin. For all the privilege, it was not a happy childhood.
Miles's father knocked all the teeth out of his mother's mouth. He grew up in a violent home.
His parents' marriage dissolved when he was a teenager.
He idolized his father, and he loved his mother. He was really affected by that.
He joined the school marching band and took part in competitions, though the top prizes would invariably be awarded to his white competitors.
He talked about that repeatedly. It hurt him. It damaged him. He was damaged from a very, very young age.
Miles got his break in 1944 when jazz greats Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie arrived in town and needed a stand-in third trumpeter. Miles got the gig at the age of just 18. Soon he moved to New York, the center of the burgeoning jazz scene.
Miles played harmonics. Miles played overtones, undertones. Miles missed beats. Miles cried with the trumpet.
He went on to release more than 50 albums, but it was his transcendent playing on the masterpiece Kind of Blue that catapulted him to international stardom.
I couldn't believe it. Nobody could. Everybody was like, oh, God, that was too much.
Go down in history as a jazz genius with an ever-evolving style.
If I did a composition that was good, great. You know what I mean? But I can't stay there. I can't do 10 like that.
One of Miles' most distinguishing features was his raspy voice. I'm intrigued to discover that this was the result of an argument following an operation on his vocal cords to remove several benign nodules.
He had had an operation on his throat. The doctor told him, don't raise your voice, nothing.
Speak to Javier.
It's a famous story. There's this club owner who had all the other musicians playing three sets a night. Miles said, I ain't playing three sets. I'm playing two for the same money. He said, no. He said, well, I ain't playing in your club. Come on, man. I'm going to go on this club. Miles got so mad, screaming at him, and all the things came out of his out of the operation.
You're okay?
Damn! That's why he had that whisper.
After surgery on the vocal cords, they remain extremely susceptible to damage. Shouting can reopen the wounds left by the surgeons, causing scarring that reduces your ability to talk. This is undoubtedly where Miles' distinctive voice comes from.
March 1991, Miles' apartment, New York, 6 months before his death. Miles is due to play the Montreux Jazz Festival in Switzerland in 4 months, but he wants to pull out for reasons of ill health. He calls conductor Quincy Jones.
Quincy! Listen! Performing at the Montreux Jazz Festival would have been the pinnacle of a career spanning nearly 50 years. I want to know what was so serious that Miles would consider pulling out. Looking at a picture of him at the time, he looks quite thin. And I can see from biographical accounts of his life that he has a history of heroin addiction. Could this be behind Miles' decision and potentially the cause of his fatal cardiac arrest?
Miles' addiction to heroin began when he was just 23 years old.
In the 50s, all those musicians were trying to be like Charlie Parker. They thought his genius was in that he was a junkie. And they used to all sit in the park over there and shoot drugs right across the street.
Miles had spent the summer in Paris.
he had this great love affair with Juliet Greco. I'll never forget, he said, when I was with Juliet Greco, everything smelled like honey and croissants and wine when I'd walk down the street because I was with her. He'd never been in love like that before. He was being feted by Picasso, Jean-Paul Sartre. Those were her friends. And he'd come back to New York, and everybody's treating him like a black guy.
Back home, Miles struggled to find recognition and was lovesick. Racial prejudice meant a relationship with Juliet in the U.S. was impossible.
He just nosedived. One thing led to another, and he starts shooting heroin.
Heroin works by interacting with proteins in the brain, giving rise to a feeling of euphoria. It's extremely addictive, and the risk of death by overdose is very high. It can slow breathing down to such a degree that the user asphyxiates, leading to cardiac arrest.
Heroin hijacked his life and his career. After 4 years of addiction, Miles decided enough was enough.
I looked in the mirror one day and I just stopped. I went out to my father's place. He had a couple hundred acres of land. Locked the door. And I stayed there for about 5 days before I could get up and walk.
Miles stopped using heroin in his mid-20s, so I don't believe that he was suffering from addiction or withdrawal in the months leading up to his death. Going cold turkey, especially in the 1950s, when heroin addiction was so poorly understood, was a huge achievement. This tells me that Miles was a strong-willed individual with a fierce survival instinct. However, I can see from his medical notes that he suffered from a debilitating illness that would endanger his life and which he was powerless to fight.
Luxury never sleeps, which is why you need the RealReal app. The RealReal is the largest and most trusted source for authenticated luxury consignment. On the app, you can shop and sell top designers 24/7 from anywhere. Think Gucci, Hermes, Louis Vuitton, Rolex, and Cartier, all up to 90% off retail. Everything is authenticated by a team overseen by luxury experts, and thousands of new items arrive daily. Personalize your shopping experience with MyTRR. Save searches for your favorite designers and items in your size and watch new items stream in. Plus, keep tabs on your favorites. Just click the heart next to any item to add it to your obsessions. An app-exclusive feature allows you to share these obsessions with friends and family, perfect for dropping holiday gifting hints. Have luxury items you no longer use? The RealReal app makes it easy to sell. Book an appointment on the app, track your items with your personalized My Sales dashboard, and get notifications when your items sell. I love using the RealReal app because I'm able to get on the app whenever I want and check and see if they have new stuff coming in. Download the RealReal app today or shop and sell your favorite luxury brands and get 20% off select items with code REAL. Plus, new shoppers get $25 off their first purchase. Available on the App Store or Google Play. Get the RealReal app today.
Miles Davis, one of the most famous jazz musicians of all time, died suddenly and unexpectedly from a cardiac arrest at the age of just 65. Now, expert pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is examining Miles' medical records and firsthand testimonies to determine what caused it.
So far, I have discovered that Miles was addicted to heroin, but beat it by going cold turkey in his 20s. I can see that although outwardly he appears in relatively good health in the months leading up to his death, he tries to pull out of the Montreux Jazz Festival. I have reports here that Miles has an inflammatory condition called bursitis. Could that be at the root of his ill health before the festival? Bursitis is an inflammation of the bursa, sacs of fluid surrounding the joints that separate the tendons from the bones. Swelling can be caused by repetitive movements or, in more serious cases, by infection or conditions such as arthritis. During flare-ups, it can cause a lot of pain and might be the reason for his reluctance to perform in the months prior to his death. According to these reports, Miles experienced pain throughout much of his life.
He had chronic pain. If Miles played a full show, he was done at the end of the show and just wanted to come off. There were plenty of times the people in the band would take him, just walk him back to the dressing room.
Bursitis can affect the shoulder, elbows, and knees, although it most often affects the hips. And I can see from Miles' medical reports that he had to have a hip operation when he was just 38 years of age.
April 1965, New York. Miles' first hip operation was an attempt to graft bone from his shin into his hip.
This was a newly developed procedure back in the 1960s. The idea is that the healthy bone then regenerates and helps heal complex injuries or deformities.
He limped. He looked like he was walking real hip, but he was walking like that because his hip was like this. I used to tease him about it. I used to say, "Yo, man, you do the hip walk." Shut up. He's like...
The operation not only changed his walk. A performance at the New Orleans Jazz Festival shows how his playing style was also affected.
My hip was stiff. I couldn't get leverage enough to play the way I wanted to play. Because when you play the way I play, I can't stand straight up and play. I have to get into it, you know what I mean?
Miles was always in pain. Always.
July 1965, New York. After being in the hospital for almost 3 months following his hip operation, Miles decided to discharge himself against the doctor's wishes.
Dr. Linda Papadopoulos, psychologist.
I think the fact that Miles checks himself out is a testament to how well he knew his illness. If you live with a chronic illness, you know, you feel you know it better than the doctors around you. You feel you understand your body better. Miles believed in doing things his own way. This wasn't somebody that was, I think, willing to compromise his integrity or his sense of self.
August 4th, 1965. Miles' apartment, New York. He lands on his still recovering hip, shattering it.
I can see that after his fall, Miles had to go back to the hospital and have a full prosthetic hip fitted. This would have been another very painful operation with a long recovery period. Continued hip pain may well have been behind Miles' reluctance to play the festival, although I note that Miles did actually perform at Montreux, despite his ailments. And it seems to me that the fact Miles suffered chronic pain could also help explain the musician's notoriously quick temper.
Pain may have been partly behind Miles' famous temper, but there were other deep-rooted issues at play, too. Like all African Americans, the musician was greatly affected by the racial tension of the 1950s. For Miles, this came to a head outside the famous Birdland Jazz Club in August 1959.
There was a story Miles told about standing on the street corner between sets smoking a cigarette.
Lurking in the shadows was a white policeman. He comes up to him and said, "Move along, move along." Miles looks at him. He say, "You see that name up there on the marquee? That's me. I'm playing here. I'm taking a break. I ain't got to go no place. I'm not doing nothing, officer."
And that policeman took out a metal club.
Bang! Bust his head wide open. And they took him to jail.
Racism tormented him his entire life. Violence was part of his upbringing. Of course, he was in a rage.
He could go off on incredible anger fits at people. They were like, intergalactic.
Miles was known as the Prince of Darkness. You have the pain, which is going to make you much more agitated and intense. You have the racism, which is going to make you angry and having a, you know, a sense of justice. And then you have the adoration, which is going to give you a sense of entitlement. And if you put those things together, it's not surprising we have these reports about his personality.
June 20th, 1991. Miles' apartment, New York. 3 months before his death. Miles is being interviewed by a French reporter for a piece about the upcoming Mantra Festival.
This has been my last year tour.
Really? You're retiring?
Yeah. That's what I said.
After years of touring constantly, Miles is clearly tired and feeling weak. This could be the side effect of the chronic pain he's endured since his first hip replacement, but Miles has lived with this pain for nearly 30 years. So I think it's unlikely to be the sole cause. However, I can see from his medical history that Miles' pain led to a life-threatening dependency. Could that be the cause of his fatal cardiac arrest?
Legendary jazz trumpeter Miles Davis has died. His talent earned him a place among the very best of jazz musicians.
On September 28, 1991, Miles Davis, the musical genius who changed the very nature of jazz, died of a cardiac arrest after going into the hospital for a routine checkup. Now, leading forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is trying to find out why.
So far, I've discovered that Miles was a heroin addict, but he beat his addiction in his 20s. I've also discovered that Miles suffered from chronic pain caused by bursitis of the hips, and he had to have several hip operations. But this was something he'd lived with for many years, and I don't think it had an impact on his sudden death. Judging by the transcripts of the interview he gave to the French journalist in June of 1991, Miles clearly had serious concerns about his own health. In addition, I can see that in the few months leading up to his death, his behavior was becoming increasingly erratic.
July 10th, 1991, Grand Hall de la Villette, Paris, France. 2.5 months before his death. Miles is nearing the end of his world tour. He appears distracted on stage, wandering around listlessly, and stopping to fiddle with his sunglasses.
A possible cause for his mental and physical decline could lie in a long history of addiction to painkillers. I can see that in the late 1970s, following yet another hip operation, Miles became dependent on the opioids codeine and morphine prescribed for pain. Morphine is the legal medical form of heroin, a substance that he was previously addicted to. Opioids act by attaching to proteins called opioid receptors in the brain, blocking the transmission of pain messages. Like heroin, effects include euphoria, relief from pain, and decreased appetite. These feelings don't last with repetitive use, and it's easy to become addicted.
1975, Miles' apartment, New York. Following another hip replacement operation, Miles became depressed and reclusive and was living in squalid conditions.
Miles gave up music for 5 years. He was tired, exhausted. He just could not cope anymore.
On top of an addiction to painkillers, Miles had developed a serious cocaine habit.
He was staying up all night long, prowling the streets, hanging out in this house, by himself.
His addiction could bring out fits of anger, as witnessed by his friend, Elena.
He wanted me to pay for coke, and I didn't have a checkbook with me, or I probably would have. So he got mad, and he took a Japanese clay pot, and he threw it at me and hit me right between the eyes.
Cocaine works by increasing levels of the pleasure hormone dopamine, making the user feel high. It's extremely addictive and in the long term can cause convulsions, acute anxiety, and even full-blown psychosis.
In January 1978, Miles's friend Elena decided his addictions had gone far enough.
The lights were off. He was sitting next to a Bunsen burner. Like that was going to keep him warm or something. People thought he was broke. He wasn't. He had checks all over the place that were just unopened. One check was $28,000, one was $40,000.
Elena took Miles back to her family home in Greenwich, Connecticut.
He was so happy to be out of the city and out of everything. The minute that he got strong, I said, come on, let's go back into the studio. Make some music.
He stopped doing drugs, and for the last 13 years of his life, he swam. He ate healthy. He just wanted to live clean.
If these records are true, and he did beat his addictions, then I think it's unlikely his death was a direct result of drugs. Having said that, I'm concerned by accounts from those around him that in the months leading up to his death, his behavior became increasingly strange.
July 24th, 1991, Rome, Italy. 2 months before his death. Miles is midway through the world tour. His girlfriend Jo has been traveling with him from the start.
He was screaming at me that I was screwing the band. Not one person in the band, but the entire band. I thought, wow, I'm going to die now like this? This is ridiculous.
He could be dark. He was seeing these things in his head.
I told his road manager, Gordon, what happened, and I left for the airport, and I didn't say one word to him.
Miles was known to have a temper, but this was extreme behavior even for him. I've found something in his medical history that could explain this violent outburst. Miles suffered from diabetes. Diabetes occurs when the pancreas is unable to produce enough insulin to metabolize sugars in the bloodstream. And when diabetics don't have enough sugar, they can fall into hypoglycemia. The brain ceases to function normally, which can lead to paranoia, aggression, and even hallucinations.
He was in sugar shock a lot of the time, and he was collapsing. He was crazy, crazy volatile.
Miles wasn't born with diabetes and developed the less dangerous type 2 as an adult. This can be brought on by obesity, though the main risk factor is genetics. If you have a close relative with type 2 diabetes, you have a good chance of developing it yourself. In addition to the effects of hypoglycemia, diabetes also carries a high risk of stroke. And I can see that in the early 1980s, Miles did indeed suffer a stroke.
January 1982. Miles' apartment, New York. Miles was at home alone, drinking beer and smoking cigarettes, when he noticed he couldn't open his right hand. His trumpeting hand.
Damn.
He spoke to his then-wife, Cicely Tyson. She told him to call 911.
Miles had had a stroke, which is a blood clot in the brain. High levels of blood sugar caused by diabetes make the body's blood vessels harder and narrower, and more likely to become blocked. In this case, the region of the brain affected controlled the muscles of his right hand.
Malibu, 1982. For months after the stroke, Miles did exercises to try to regain the use of his right hand. Luckily, he achieved full mobility. But the stroke had been a wake-up call.
he tried to stay healthy, boxed, and he ran.
He was quite in good shape. I think he was trying to hold death off, too.
Diabetes is a condition that has been linked to sudden cardiac arrest and stroke. Miles may have been attempting to clean up his lifestyle in the later years, but it's clear that by the summer of 1991, his health was deteriorating. And looking at his history, I can see that in addition to diabetes, there is another potentially fatal illness that could have caused Miles' rapid decline.
Hi everyone, this is Jillian with Court Junkie. Court Junkie is a true crime podcast that covers court cases and criminal trials using audio clips and interviews with people close to the cases. Court Junkie is available on Apple Podcasts and PodcastOne.com.
The death of jazz legend Miles Davis at the age of 65 sent shockwaves through the musical world. Now, world-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is scrutinizing Miles' medical records to find out why he died.
So far, I've discovered that Miles had a history of diabetes and stroke, as well as chronic pain caused by his hips. Over the years, he struggled with addictions to heroin, cocaine, and prescription drugs. And there's something else in Miles' medical history that concerns me.
I was not aware of how ill Miles was in those final months. I may have had my head stuck in the ground on that.
September 12th, 1991, Malibu, 2 weeks before his death. Miles is at home with tour manager Gordon Meltzer. He has recently completed the 8-country world tour.
Miles said, "I don't feel well."
Miles was taken to the hospital. This was not unusual. After a long tour, Miles would frequently become ill.
He worked hard. He used to tell that he'd be wiped out when he'd come back off trips. But while he was on the road, the adrenaline keeps you going. The adrenaline in the crowds.
To see him go into the hospital almost seemed sensible. It was part of the normal routine we had. He'd be in for a week or two, and he'd come out strong and ready to go on to a fall tour.
Miles had pneumonia. I can see from his medical history that Miles had several major bouts of the illness throughout his life, starting back as early as 1975. Repeated bouts of pneumonia could be linked to Miles' diabetes. People with diabetes are more susceptible mainly because their immune systems are weakened by the insulin imbalance.
September 12, 1991. St. John's Hospital and Health Center, Santa Monica. 16 days before his death. Tour manager Gordon Meltzer is paying Miles a visit.
Miles was laying in bed, we thought asleep, and there was, as usual, a boxing video playing on the TV set at the foot of Miles' bed. Just as Joe Louis threw the knockout punch at the end of that film, Miles sat up and threw that punch in synchrony with Joe Louis and then just laid back down and went to sleep. He'd been awake the whole time. He knew exactly what was going on and he didn't miss a beat. We all assumed things were going to be just fine as always.
But over the next 10 days, Miles' health slides dramatically as the infection in his lungs gets worse.
Pneumonia is a very serious respiratory disease, and it can be caused by a number of viruses and bacteria. The small airways of the lung fill with fluid as the body struggles to fight the disease. In extreme cases, the lungs are unable to get oxygen into the blood. The patient literally drowns.
September 21st, 1991, 7 days before his death. Seeing that his oxygen levels are falling, medical staff attempt to put the ailing musician on a ventilator.
Things took a real bad turn right then. Miles panicked violently, fought it, and struggled against the doctors and nurses holding him down.
Girlfriend Jo walks in at the crucial moment.
He had wires all over him, and he was pulling them out of him and screaming at the nurses.
I'm trying to calm him down. Please just leave us. Just leave us. Please just leave us.
She manages to calm him down, but the intubation attempt fails.
He said, "Pretty lady," and then got back into bed. And the nurses walked out, and I was with him all weekend.
Intubation is a very invasive procedure, only used in real emergencies. And this clearly wasn't a normal bout of pneumonia for Miles. Without the help of a ventilator, Miles may not have been able to get enough oxygen into his body.
September 24th, 4 days before his death.
His head was in my lap. And he just looked at me. And his eyes kind of went blank. But he was breathing, and it was just like that. The doctor came in, he looked at him, and then more doctors came in, and then a whole team was around us, and I was still in the bed, and his head was in my lap, and they started working on his chest and hooking him up with me in the bed and him still next to me. And they said, "Get off. He just had a stroke."
In my opinion, this event was almost certainly anoxic brain injury, oxygen starvation. Miles would have been having problems getting enough oxygen to his brain due to the pneumonia. And this problem would have been made worse by his refusal of intubation, a procedure which helps to oxygenate the blood.
September 28th, 1991. Miles has slipped into a coma.
The doctor said, "It really doesn't look like there's anything anybody can do."
At 10:46 a.m., those at his bedside are asked for their permission to turn off the life support machine.
We were seeing the beginning of... we were going to have to confront the reality that the legend was going to leave us.
I was with him till the last minute, and I felt good about that. I also felt that a man who gave the world so much beauty deserved to be with the woman that he loves till the end.
I actually couldn't believe that it was all over, that the music was gone. But it was true. We'd lost him.
One of the giants of jazz is dead, Miles Davis, who helped to define what it meant to be cool, at least...
News of Miles' death shocked the world.
I guess I viewed him as a force unto himself, really superhuman, that he would come back, that he would recover.
Miles died of cardiac arrest and respiratory failure, having had pneumonia, which prevented him from getting enough oxygen to his brain. But Miles had had bouts of pneumonia before and lived to tell the tale. So I want to know if there was another underlying cause that had weakened his body and meant that he was unable to fight the infection. I can see that Miles had been prescribed AZT in the final years of his life, the HIV drug.
I asked him, I saw this white pill. I said, "What you taking that for?" He said, "ACT." And I said, "Oh, well," I said, that's AIDS. And he said, "Yeah." You didn't say nothing else.
Patients with HIV have a compromised immune system and are therefore more likely to get repeated bouts of pneumonia. Was Miles Davis's final illness a result of HIV?
Legendary jazz trumpeter Miles Davis has died. His talent earned him a place among the very best of jazz musicians.
On September 25th, 1991, jazz legend Miles Davis died from cardiac arrest and respiratory failure following a bout of pneumonia. He was just 65 years old. But expert pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter doesn't believe that is the full story. He has discovered that Miles was taking AZT, famously used to treat the HIV virus. Did Miles die of AIDS?
I said, what you taking that for? He said, AZT. And he wouldn't talk about it. There's nothing I could say about that. If he didn't want to talk about it, that's his business.
The anecdotal evidence that Miles was on AZT is strange. The drug was originally developed in the 1960s to fight cancer, but other drugs seemed to work better, and it was simply put aside. When the AIDS crisis hit, the drug was found to be effective and was brought back off the shelf. At the time of Miles' death in 1991, AZT was normally only prescribed for those with HIV.
Miles was secretive about his medication, even with girlfriend Jo.
We had bottles all over the place, and he would take all the labels off. He'd say, bring me that whatever.
Give me my pills.
I'd say, what pill? Then none of them have labels.
Which one?
And he'd say, shake them. Okay, shake them.
Not that one.
And depending on the sound of the pill, he knew which pill he wanted.
Yes, one.
We can't know for sure whether or not Miles had HIV or AIDS. Though he suffered from weight loss and pneumonia leading up to his death, there is no evidence that this is what caused his final illness. In addition, none of his known partners reported contracting the disease from him.
He never mentioned AZT. We never spoke about health.
But there is another disease that would fit with all of the medical evidence that I've seen. Miles was born with sickle cell anemia, a hereditary blood disease. And in America, it's almost 10 times more prevalent among African Americans than in the overall population.
Miles, ever conscious of his race, was touchy about an illness that specifically affects black people.
If I had said to Miles, do you have sickle cell anemia? He would have looked at me and said, see, you're putting me down because I'm black.
Sickle cell anemia affects the function and structure of red blood cells. When these blood cells are under stress, they form an unusual sickle shape. The disease causes painful bouts of illness that can last for months at a time and seem to strike from nowhere. Sickle cell anemia was not fully understood until the 1970s, by which time Miles was in his 50s. He was very secretive about his illness, which makes it difficult to know how he managed it. Nowadays, sufferers take specially developed medications, sometimes receiving blood transfusions and bone marrow transplants. But there is no record of Miles ever receiving such treatments.
Dr. Hunter believes he can draw a connection between the disease and several aspects of Miles' life, including his many addictions to drugs.
I think that his addictions, first to heroin and later to cocaine and painkillers, could well have arisen out of his need to somehow manage the pain of his sickle cell anemia.
He was in pain, so much pain. And it wasn't easy to go to a hospital and be taken care of at that time. It was easier to get a little $5 package of heroin and the pain would be gone.
Bursitis leading to hip replacement can also be caused by sickle cell anemia. The misformed blood cells get caught in the smaller blood vessels, particularly around the joints, and this leads to inflammation and pain. Over time, the pressure on the joints causes wear and tear that leads to fractures and ultimately requires surgery. Finally, sufferers often have crises around their lungs and develop acute chest infections, including pneumonia. Miles had been living with a death sentence hanging over him. He was born with an incurable condition that affected his health throughout his entire life.
Miles always knew he was not going to live a long time. His father didn't live a long time. His brother died young. His sister died.
In the 1970s, The average life expectancy of someone with sickle cell disease was only 14 years of age. Even today, it's between 45 and 60, and many die of multi-organ failure. In the case of Miles Davis, to me the question is not, why did he die so young, but how did he last so long? Miles died when he was 65. He was very lucky to have made it beyond childhood.
Miles was a courageous guy. He wasn't afraid of anything. He was a fighter.
Miles had gotten through his life by refusing to give in and refusing to compromise. It's also clear that at the time of his death, his combative side got the better of him. When he rejected intubation, he gave up his last best chance of prolonging his life. He wasn't able to get enough oxygen into his bloodstream, and his body eventually shut down.
Miles started playing music when he was a teenager. He died when he was 65. Countless people owe the musical genres they practice today to the work that Miles Davis did and don't even know it.
It's like he was in tune with the human spirit, the pulse, the heartbeat. He could do it like nobody else that I knew of.
He said, "I give the world my music. Every breath that I take is what I give them. I don't have to give anybody anything else." He's Miles Davis. He's way beyond that.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autopsy. Don't forget to subscribe at podcastone.com with the Podcast One app or at Apple Podcasts. Then go to reels.com. That's reelz.com for clips, extras, and more from the TV version of the series, including reenactments and autopsy photos you'll only see on Reels channel. Find Reels on your TV at reels.com. I'm Dr. Michael Hunter.